start with Senate File 58. Senator Prettner-Solon, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the, Mr. Chair, the food and beverage tax for the support of the deck, and I thank you for the opportunity to present this. It authorizes a 0.75% increase of the food and beverage tax within the city of Duluth. This is a key component in generating revenue to provide the local match for the new arena at the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center. The food and beverage tax is the single largest of revenue to provide the local match for the project, although both the DEC and UMD will also each be providing approximately 20% of the local match. The city put the question of this increased food and beverage tax to the voters last year. The referendum was approved by a significant margin, and with the show of local support,
they're not shy.
No.
Local food and beverage tax was included in the Senate's 2006 tax bill. When the bond allocation didn't come through for the DEC arena, the tax provision was dropped. Now, as we renew our efforts on the bonding request, we also are renewing our efforts on the necessary local taxing authority. And I have with me today Mayor Herb Bergson, who would like to talk briefly about the project and its importance to the city. We also have Dan Russell, the director from the DEC, and after they have finished their comments, we would be happy to stand for questions.
Mr. Mayor, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on behalf of Senate File 58, which would authorize the city to increase our food and beverage tax to provide our share of the local match for the DEC Arena project. As Senator Prettner-Solon mentioned, we are pleased that the citizens of Duluth responded so positively to the referendum we held last year on the question of raising this local tax. The referendum question passed by a margin of 61% to 39%, and 22% of the eligible voters voted. This percentage compares favorably with recent citywide elections. A new arena at the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center will provide our city with a sports and entertainment complex that will serve us for the next 50 years. It will provide the University of Minnesota Duluth men's and women's hockey program with a facility much more on par with their counterparts in the WCHA. Right now, our Bulldogs hockey teams are playing in the oldest and smallest arena in the WCHA. The university has been looking at options for a new home for the Bulldogs. They have even developed proposals to build an on-site facility. We are very happy that UMD has agreed to stay at the DEC and be a partner in supporting this new facility, which anchors the Downtown Entertainment Center and provides a focal point for regional and state trade shows and entertainment opportunities for northeastern Minnesota. The new arena project has been a top priority for the city for the past 2 years. We hope this is the year for the DEC arena funding and the food and beverage tax to provide the necessary local matching funds for this important project. Again, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senator Prettner-Solon's bill. We're very hopeful that the committee will act favorable on this request, and after Mr. Russell's comments, we'll certainly answer any questions the committee members might have.
Thank you.
My name is Dan Russell. I'm executive director of the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center. It's always a pleasure to be with you. I did distribute an update developed specifically for the legislature on kind of the revisiting the project from last year, what's new. Basically, the project's the same scope. The DEC Board of Directors has worked very hard over the last year to make sure we can get this project in the ground. And if approved and the tax is approved, we fully intend to be driving pile and doing site prep this summer. It will provide over 300 local union jobs. We have a project labor agreement in effect on all Duluth or all DEC projects. We're looking forward to that. And one other exciting development is we've remained true to our commitment to making this the first LEED certified arena basically in the world. We have a head start on that. HOK, who's a design partner, who's involved with the Twin Stadium and the University of Minnesota football stadium, is totally committed to that, and we're well on our way to getting that certification. Our goal is to reduce energy use in this facility by 50% over other similar facilities around the country. With that, hopefully this lays out how we got to the new budget. We talked yesterday in Senator Langseth's committee about construction inflation. It is up 13.9% according to the Department of Finance. The funding plan that was approved by the voters by over 60% still works, but obviously construction inflation is going up much higher than food and beverage receipts. So I'd like to thank you for your support and certainly hopefully him prepared to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Russell, you alluded to your voter approval. When did you get it?
We had a special election last February 28th. It was a good turnout for a special election. It was over 23%, and the final vote was a 61% approval. So it was 81-82 in favor in Duluth and 51-48.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Russell, is it enough to – it sounds like you're a little bit short. The referendum amount was short of what you're actually going to need?
No, as far as the tax increase?
Mm-hmm.
No, it still works. It means that the bonds – the plan right now is to go out 25 years, and as food and beverage tax receipts increase, which they're projected to do and have traditionally in Duluth over the last 10 years, basically 4-5%, and UND's and the contribution increases by 3%, we are hoping – to pay this bond issue off in 17, 18 years.
Thank you.
Now it's just going to take a little bit longer.
Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, I think a point that Mr. Russell made last night is important here, though, too, is that the formula works this year. But by extending it any longer, as inflation on building grows, we would not be able to make it.
Anything further?
That's all.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you're increasing the food and beverage tax from 1.5 to 2.25 and extending it out in time also. Am I clear on that?
Well, currently there's a 0.5% food and beverage tax will be going off the books, and I believe Senator Prentner-Solon in 4 years?
2011.
So that tax will be going off the books. That will sunset. And this tax, also, the language provides for a sunset. That was part of our arrangement with the voters and one of the reasons we got their support. So that's clearly outlined in this tax, too.
And, Mr. Chair, so what is the tax rate going to be in Duluth, the next 4 years and then the years that you're – I mean, are you adding on to what you currently have? How is that working? I'm not following that.
We have our finance director from the city here, Mr. Chair. Could we call her forward? I think she can help us.
And, Mr. Chair, while she's coming up, maybe Senator Prentner-Solon or the mayor, what is the current total sales tax in Duluth? Do you have a local option sales tax and a lodging tax? What is the cumulative of that?
Mr. Chair, we have a local option sales tax, but we have food and beverage taxes, hospitality taxes, and that's what Ms. Stark can help us with.
Okay. Senator Scoy, lodging taxes also.
There's lodging tax also.
Chair Bach and Senator,
please,
my name is Jeannie Stark.
Your name for the tape, please.
Jeannie Stark. I'm the finance director for the City of Duluth. Currently, the city's local option sales tax is 1%, and then we have a 1.5% food and beverage tax in addition to that. And as Mr. Russell told you, the 0.5% is for the DEC expansion from several years ago. That will be sunsetting in 2011. So for the next 4 years, with the food and beverage tax, it would be 2.25% plus the 1%. Plus the 6.5%.
And Mr. Chair, if you're staying in a hotel or a motel in Duluth, is there also a lodging tax?
Ms. Stark?
Chair Bach, there is two or three different lodging taxes. I think there's the base 1%, there's a 3% and then an additional 2%. And actually, 0.5% of the lodging is also for the deck expansion, but this current proposal is only food and beverage. It is not on lodging at all.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I guess members, you know, we do have a problem as we move toward this regionalization of funding for projects. There are, you know, communities and areas of the state that don't have the wherewithal to have a 1% local option sales tax, and I'm not exactly sure what the cumulative here of the lodging tax is, but it's, you know, 2 or 3% anyway, and now a 2.25% beverage tax. This is a little bit of a concern to me, and I was hoped that the committee would think about what we're doing for the state tax policy as we have all of these differing tax rates around the state.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, I appreciate we also have that concern. That's why we presented it to the voters to find out if they were willing to support this type of a tax increase. But I think it's also important to look that we are a regional center and that we are a location for a destination, tourist destination. And in order to support the tourist attractions that are in the area, we do need to have some type of taxing support for that. And the other thing I think is really important to acknowledge is that how much of it will be retiring in 2011? Is it 1%? 0.5% will be retiring in 2011.
Senator Langseth.
Mr. Chair, the one thing that's different about this project from a number of projects where there's been a piggyback sales tax, in many cases those were for convention centers, which were strictly event centers. This one is connected with the University of Minnesota, and it provides a facility for their hockey team. So that, I think, is one reason why the state is justified in coming up with part of the funding. But also, we have allowed other cities to have a piggyback sales tax for convention centers, and this one is part convention center, part hockey arena for the university. So I think it's somewhat different.
Senator Solon, the bill says that the tax would pay for $37,931,000 of bonds. Is that number there anticipated to be a 50% match with the state?
Mr. Chair, no. The total cost of the facility is around $75 million. And there also is a portion that the deck will be supplying as well as UMD.
Well, I guess my point is if the legislature appropriates, pick a number, $37 million, let's say we're 931,000 short of what I see here in the bill. What would the city of Duluth issue for bonds if the legislature came up just short of this number? My reason for asking that is this bill says that is what you're going to issue, $37,931,000. I'm just wondering if we should say you're going to issue up to that amount, so that if you decide you want to do a little less than that amount, the city has the flexibility to do that. So I don't know if this, you know, if the amount the state appropriates somehow determines the amount the city's going to appropriate, I think it might be helpful if we gave you a little bit of flexibility. But, I mean, if this is the hard number and this is what you know you're going to do, then I don't think we need to change it. But members, the bill says that they're going to issue bonds of a hard number, and it really doesn't give the city much flexibility. So maybe Mr. Russell can help.
The DEC board is committed to that dollar figure, and as we've discussed in the past, one of the things included in here is a construction manager at risk, so we know exactly what we can afford and what the local bond issue is. But the expectation is that the local bond will match or exceed the state contribution per, I think, Department of Finance guidelines and Capital Investment Committee guidelines. So the city, I believe, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, at this point is planning on matching the state appropriation. If there was an issue, we'd have to deal with that on a local basis.
Members, I think if you look at page 2, line 2.1, in the bill, the tax is set to pay for that amount of bonds. I wonder if we deleted the word of and put up to in the event the city wants to do slightly less would be helpful. Senator Larson moves an oral amendment that on line 2.1 delete of and insert up to. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
After no, motion prevails. Senator Ortman.
Following on what Senator Skoy talked about, the different taxes, I'm trying to do the math here. I'm looking at the, you're saying there's 2.25 already. That's the food and beverage tax? That's what your proposal would bring it to? 2.25?
It would bring it to 2.25.
Okay, right, 2.25, plus the one local option sales tax, plus 6.5% sales tax, right?
Plus the 6.5 state sales tax.
Right, and then the lodging tax, I was just trying to follow what you said. I thought you said 1 + 3 + 2. Can you explain what they are, a total of 6 on the lodging tax?
Can I take a run at that? Back in 1963, there was a 3% lodging tax put in Duluth to support the original arena. Since then, like many communities, the lodging tax has raised. So that got up, I believe, to 5%, and so there was an additional 2. And back in the 90s for deck expansion, we put in 0.5% food and beverage tax and 0.5% room tax. In Duluth, food and beverage tax raises much more revenue than the room tax. I think that would be true throughout the state. It's just the nature of the hospitality business. That 0.5% that was passed in the 90s, both the food and beverage tax and the room tax, was scheduled to sunset when the bonds were paid off, and all the proceeds were allocated to that. So even though the bond length was 15 years, everybody projected that would be paid off with all the receipts sooner, which they would have. Part of those proceeds, however, with legislative approval, went to support the Lake Superior Aquarium a few years ago. Nevertheless, those are short-term 15-year bonds. They're paid off, and that tax will go away and sunset in 2011, 4 years out.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair. If I add all that up, you're talking about 15.75% sales tax on purchases if you're staying in a hotel.
If you're in a hotel.
Right. And, Mr. Chair, if I may, 6.5% of that is going to go to the state. So if you reduce that by the 6.5%, you're talking about 9.25% local?
No.
Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, a portion of it is food and beverage, so it doesn't apply to the hospitality tax for the lodging.
All right.
The 2 point, the 1.5 or the
2.25.
Well, it currently, no.
Mr. Chair, I think
1.5 currently.
Right. Some is for lodging and some is for food and beverage. I understand that. So they're paying a different level of taxation for the different type of purchase that there is. I understand. I'm wondering on those taxes, however, can you give us a gross amount of revenues less the state's share on an annual basis? Can you tell us how much that raises for the local area?
Mayor?
The 0.75% will generate, I believe, $1.4 million initially, if that's the question.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, that's not the question. And what I'm wondering is what, when you impose all of those taxes less the state sales tax, how much will be generated in revenue in 2008 if we adopt the change?
Right now, the combined food and beverage and hotel motel tax generated $4.2 million in 2006, and that grows each year, and it depends on the year, the weather, a lot of factors roll into that, but I'm just guessing that we're going to be in the 4.4 area by 2008 total.
Mr. Chair, does that I didn't follow what you said at the beginning. Is that all of the taxes that we just talked about, or is that a portion of them?
That is the food and beverage and the accommodations tax, not the local option sales tax.
Mr. Chair, if you add that in, how much does that take your annual revenue to?
The local option sales tax? That generates about $11 million a year.
If I may, I'd just like to add that we did look at raising the hotel motel tax as part of the funding scenario, but thought that we had kind of reached a level where we were competitive bidding for conventions or whatnot with Minneapolis and St. Paul and some other state communities. Plus, it didn't raise a significant enough money to really be a factor. So there is no increase in the hospitality hotel motel tax as part of this package. In fact, that tax will just go down in 4 years, and there's no plans to increase that at this time.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I guess I do have one additional question. What is the annual budget for the city of Duluth?
$78 million.
Thank you.
Anything else, members? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and probably to the mayor, Senator Solon. Living in the western, or I don't get to Duluth very often, so I haven't had the opportunity to experience this. How is the downtown doing? Is the business community pretty supportive of this? I mean, I'm sure they'd like to see the arena come in, but are they supportive of the food and beverage tax?
Just yesterday, one of the managers of two of those restaurants from the Holiday Inn testified with us at the Senate Finance Committee in support, and he, like many business owners, are supportive. We have several new businesses being constructed right now. We just had an $80 million cancer research center expansion to SMDC downtown. We are currently seeing a Sheraton hotel built in the heart of the downtown. We had a $20 million project approved just 2 days ago for the heart of the downtown. We have a new hotel being built just two blocks from the deck, and one of the reasons they're building it is on speculation that the deck expansion will actually happen.
I'd just like to add that Duluth Chamber of Commerce, hardly a tax advocator, before the referendum did a survey of their members, and 97% of the businesses approved of the additional tax if it was dedicated for a new arena.
Senator Solon.
My comments, Mr. Chair, were similar to Mr. Russell's, that the business community is on record as supporting the chamber, on record supporting this project. They actually campaigned to pass the referendum.
Mr. Chair, are they members of the state chamber?
Yes.
Oh, good.
They are.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
This is just a real aside kind of issue, but could I ask Senator Pogemiller how many taxes are imposed in Minneapolis for entertainment lodging? I know when I eat in downtown Minneapolis, it seems like the bill is double what it would have been in Blaine.
Senator Johnson, just so that Senator Pogemiller doesn't make a mistake out of recollection, maybe we'll let Senate Council get that information.
I appreciate it very much, Mr. Chairman.
To the committee. Maybe
the point I'd like to make is when you have a regional center like that, an entertainment center, if the voters are approving these taxes, if they feel that they can come up to the plate and meet the bill, I think that's the way to go. No different than in Anoka County when we were dealing with the stadium issue last year. It was a wonderful project if we would have had voter referendum.
Mr. Chair, to Senator Johnson, I think the reason that the local voters support the beverage and food and lodging tax is because they don't end up paying that as much as the people who are coming from outside the area to visit there again. So they're actually getting the tax revenue from people that don't reside within the
Mr.
community.
Chair.
Senator Sloan.
Mr. Chair, well, that's not true entirely, Senator Scoy, because it is the food and beverage tax, and so every time they go out to eat, and a lot of people go out to eat in Duluth, they do have to pay that tax.
Thank you.
Members, I met with some Mr. Russell and other members of the DEC recently, and this project is ready to go. And I think if we could do anything this session to make sure that they don't lose another construction season, I think we all would benefit from that. So I'd like to make a pitch that we send this bill to finance, and that finance consider trying to move a bill out on its own with the DEC and the tax on it so that they get an opportunity to get construction started as early in the spring as possible. This bill is considerably larger than it was last year because the Department of Finance told them they had to add in construction inflation for a year, and if they lose the window, we get wrapped up in the end of session games here and don't get out of here until the end of May. By the time they go out for an RFP to find a construction manager, much of the construction season in Duluth will be lost. And they'll be into winter heating where they wouldn't have had winter heating for part of the project. So I think there's a pretty strong reason that. And some of these things where I think we have good bipartisan agreement, and the governor has the DEC funding in his budget, I think it would be beneficial to the whole state if we moved some of these things out. I think that was part of the message in the November election, is people want us to get our work done. Mm-hmm. And where we have an agreement and everybody thinks we should do this, I think it would be helpful if we moved it along. So I would like to entertain a motion from Senator Pogemiller that Senate File 58 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
I know how that works.
You better vote for it.
Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We appreciate your support.
Yeah, it was an incredibly persuasive argument.
Senator Pogemiller laying a base.
Made a lot of sense to me, Mr. Chairman.
And members, there was a test on that bill for you. Everybody, you know, I noticed Representative Murphy had a test yesterday over in the House. And so we had a little test here this morning, and you all failed. The bill summary that we're looking at here, if you read your summary.
I read it.
In the second to the last line said that the amount of these bonds was $33,700,000. That was last year's number, and it just wasn't quite updated yet. So this is the committee that does the hard work, and just a little reminder to make sure we read through what we're passing out of here. The bill is correct.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think what you're saying is in the future we shouldn't trust the what the chair hands out to the
Senator Langseth, I indicated it was a test. The chair knew what was on the test.
We read the bill.
Senator Solon, Senate File 60.
I didn't look at that. I read it.
And members, the reason that this bill is in front of us, even though that there aren't any tax implications, is this bill is going to set up a trust fund in the city of Duluth for some obligations that they have, and I thought it was important that when cities that are dependent upon state government for a lot of their funding, that when they start setting up dedicated accounts and putting city general fund tax dollars into that, it's very helpful for the tax committee to know what those dedicated accounts are, because many of our cities, not Duluth, but many others, come here and plead poverty. They need more state aid, and I think it's helpful if this committee knows what kind of different accounts that cities are holding when they're at the same time asking for help from the state. So that's why it's here, and I guess when other bills like this come forward where cities want to set up some kind of dedicated accounts, I think it's helpful for the tax committee to know that. So that's why it's here, and the committee will be asking for any other bills that look like this so that we know what's going on in city budgets across the state. So, Senator Fuller?
So, Mr. Chair, Senate File 60 actually provides the City of Duluth authority to establish certain investment accounts with the State Board of Investment. so that the city can meet its obligation to provide post-retirement health care benefits to its retirees. This is an obligation that was made many years ago, which has resulted in a tremendous unfunded liability in the city. The total liability is projected to exceed $300 million. And the city, it's important you hear this, is not seeking funds from the state, just the authority to set aside its own resources and accounts, which will produce more investment earnings than the city can generate on its own authority. We were here in 2006 with a similar proposal and found a broad base of support here in the Senate and the House. However, in the very last days of the 2006 session, the bill that was to be the vehicle for our Duluth Amendment was pulled from the calendar, and so we are back again in 2007. And the sooner we can address this issue, the better, because the city's position with respect to its financial obligation continues to get larger. And I have with me today the mayor and from the city of Duluth, Herb Bergson, as well as Jeannie Stark, the finance director, to provide further background information and answer questions for you.
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm the mayor of the city of Duluth, Herb Bergson. You've been provided with a flyer that a synopsis of a plan to resolve the city's retiree health care unfunded liability. We aren't here asking for money. We are here asking you for some legislation that will allow us to be more aggressive with our investments and to create an irrevocable trust. We will fix the problem ourselves. We're just asking for your help to allow us to let us help ourselves. This legislation would authorize the city to establish certain investment accounts which will allow us to meet long-standing obligations to pay for retiree health care benefits. Our current projected obligation exceeds $300 million. Our proposal asks for authority so that we can set aside our own resources and accounts which will achieve a greater return on investments than we can possibly achieve under existing city authority. In other words, we're not looking for state funding. We will solve this problem on our own if you give us the tools to do so. We have been dealing with this problem over the past 3 years, and as the senator mentioned, we did attempt to have legislation passed last year, but it fell apart at the last minute. Since 1983, when the city first offered retiree health benefits, we've been funding and paying for retiree claims in a pay-as-you-go fashion. However, no money was ever set aside for the future unfunded liability and future obligations. In 2004, GASB released their statement number 45, which requires governmental units beginning in 2007 to recognize and account for the estimated future cost of the liability. This statement did not require the liability to be funded, only to be recognized and reported on financial statements. We were ahead of the game in requesting that we begin to resolve the problem in 2006. However, fiscal prudence, not to mention bond rating agencies and financial institutions, will require a plan of action and a significant level of funding. The only way GASB 45 allows the liability to be reduced is to pay the current cost or to deposit money in an irrevocable trust fund. There's currently no state authorization allowing governmental units to set up such a fund for that purpose. As Senator Solon indicated, the language before you now is slightly different from the version that was first introduced. The author's amendment is the product of discussions which have taken place between city officials, representatives from the State Board of Investments, the Office of the State Auditor, and the Public Employees Retirement Association. The primary objective here is to establish two accounts, one irrevocable trust which will receive a significant initial deposit as described in the flyer, and subsequent annual deposits of city resources in order to meet the city's estimated future obligations of retiree health benefits. The second account would receive the remainder of the Community Investment Trust Fund, which would be reduced by $10 million because of this initial investment in the irrevocable trust. The Community Investment Trust is the source of paying city street bonds, and it is an endowment fund of sorts where we only use the earnings to pay for the street bonds. By reducing that capital amount by $10 million reduces the amount of interest that can be collected. Therefore, we need to increase the amount of interest to offset the loss in the principal amount. The sooner we can begin putting our resources aside, the sooner we will be on a path to solve this problem on our own. We understand that there are other jurisdictions that have concerns over unfunded liabilities. We know there will be language that will provide some authority on a broader base, and we will not oppose such an initiative. However, the two pieces of our plan are interdependent, and we cannot delay any longer because this problem grows daily. We attempted to work with the state auditor and governmental agencies in 2006 to secure authorization to allow us to set up the irrevocable trust last year, but as Senator Solon mentioned, it didn't succeed. The 2006 amendment has received thus far in our meetings bipartisan support, and we look for the future support in the Senate and the House. And it's my understanding that representatives from the SBI and PARA are here today to indicate their support for the proposal and perhaps answer any questions that you senators may have. We will stand to answer questions if you have any.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Section 1, where you're establishing this, they're allowing the State Board of Investment to manage your funds, what your gain is there? Is they're going to get a higher interest rate than you're currently able to get through your community investment fund? And am I hearing that right?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sloan.
Actually, we will have higher rate of return and lower administrative costs, and we can shave, I believe I've heard, $150 million off of the costs that that the taxpayers normally would have to pay. So it's a significant change over the 30 years.
Mr. Chair, so $150 million in savings, how large is the account?
Ms. Stark?
Chair Bach and Senator, what the $150 million is the actuarial study that we had done on our health plan for retirees back in 2005. And when they do the actuarial study, they use a certain discount rate, which is our average rate of return, and they used a 4.5% rate, and we asked them to take a look at what it would be if it were 7.5% or 8%, and that's where the liability is reduced from $300 million down to about $159 million. So it's not the size of the fund, it's the actuarial study number that was reduced by $150 million.
And Mr. Chair, have you guys, and I'm not real familiar with your fund or what the State Board of Investment, but when you get that significant change in return, is there significant risk that's going along with that, or what's the result of that?
Chair Bach and Senator, it's my understanding in looking at the State Board of Investment's 10-year annualized rate of return, it's about a 9.1% average, and the city is earning about 4.6, I think, last year. There are three different funds. The city will have to choose how they want to invest their money amongst these three different funds that the State Board of Investment offers, and one is a money market, one is a securities, and then there's a fixed income. So it's still going to be up to the city how they want to invest their money and how much risk they want to assume.
And Mr. Chair, and just my own thoughts on that, you might be even more accurate if you used a little shorter period of time for estimating your annual return, because when you're going back 10 years, you're bringing in the last 4 years of the 90s, and we all know what that was like. So you might want to take a little look at what happened since 2001. And on the Section 2, your post-employment benefits, where are you getting the dollars to put into that irrevocable fund?
The city presently, Senator, has a community investment trust fund that is funded by an agreement with the casino in Duluth. The Fond du Lac tribe has a compact with us. We have $60 million in that fund right now. We would reduce it to $50 million and put $10 million into the irrevocable trust, and then also money from the fund balance of the health care fund balance, which is in the neighborhood of $4 million right now. So, and if I could tack onto that, if you reduce the Community Investment Trust from $60 million to $50 million, $60 million getting 4% is $2.4 million per year used for to fix streets. If you reduce it to 50 and only get 5%, that's $2.5 million a year. So even if we only got 5% interest, we still gain $100,000 in interest money to pay off street bonds.
That makes sense to me. And then the public, you're going to use the $10 million and invest that and try to offset the long-term $300 million unfunded liabilities.
We, in order to take advantage of the higher interest rate immediately and get working on this problem, we need to inject it with some good money to start with.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Chair Buck. I think Senator Scoy's line of inquiry answered my questions.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, are you going to have the board up to the table? I really, they're chomping at the bit, and I want to hear what their input is.
Certainly can, if you'd like to hear.
Yes,
from.
I'd like to.
Board of Investment here.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Howard Bicker. I'm the director of the State Investment Board. You know, from the board's perspective, we are very supportive of Duluth's proposal and how they're going about it. We just want to make sure everybody's careful and understands that there is some risk in investing of these assets. And, you know, I get a little nervous when it kind of sounds like this is going to be a guaranteed deal, that we're going to make more money here and there and so on and so forth. The board has done well on long periods of time. There are going to be bad years. As the senator alluded to, 2001, 2002, and 2003 were not fun years. The stock market was negative. But over the long period of time, our retirement-related assets for the last 25 years have earned 11.2%. Now, again, there's been 20% plus years, and there's been negative 5%, 10% years. So I just wanted to make it clear that we will do everything we can to help Duluth achieve their goals, and we commend them for taking this issue on. And we believe that hopefully we can add value to them over the long period of time, but I want to make it clear that it may not be every year as you go through this. You're going to have ups and downs, and Duluth will have to make some decision. The mayor and the city council and the finance director and maybe Senator Solem, whoever is going to have to determine what asset allocation they want for those assets. And if they choose some equities, which I assume they will for long term, especially for the money in the trust, as we all know, stocks don't go straight up. We all wish they did, but they don't. And there will be some volatility in the long run. I think this will be a good program for Duluth. I just want to make sure it's clear that it won't be necessarily every year. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bicker. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming to talk to us. I know that there are other school districts, cities, counties that are all proposing this same kind of arrangement with the State Investment Board, and I'm wondering if the State Investment Board has any guidance for us. Should we let them all? And should we be looking at policy questions like, if you're going to invest, we want you to invest those funds for at least 10 years? Or I mean, what types of protections should we be looking at and guidance to make sure that we're doing this consistently and making sure that you have the wherewithal to manage all of these investments?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I think it's a great idea for all those with OPEPs, this other pension obligation or other post-employment benefit obligations, to fund them. I mean, it's just good financial management to pay for it in advance and earn some money than to have a pay-as-you-go system. We've seen what Social Security has done to the United States budget right now and some of the issues. As far as how they should invest it, it depends on each city and county and school district, whoever, has different lengths of obligations. Some of them have obligations that were in place for the last 30 years, but no new employees get them or whatever. So their liability stream will be very different than, say, a Duluth liability stream. So what they need to do is really see what their liability stream looks like. I can also, as I understand it, the Duluth bill requires that PERA administer this trust and the State Board of Investment invest the assets. The legislation that I understand it will be provided for, you know, statewide entities and the school boards and cities and counties will not require PERA to be in, but they have to have somebody administrate the trust, whether it's a bank or insurance company or PERA. And the investment arm won't necessarily just be the State Board of Investment. Again, bank, trust, departments, insurance companies, and whatever, as I understand that piece of legislation that will be introduced. As far as investment vehicles, right now the board cannot commingle these assets with our pension assets. There's tax ramifications and whatnot for commingling pension and non-pension related assets. We have established three investment vehicles right now for non-pension related assets. If more people start choosing the state board to do non-pension investment related activities, we will probably add maybe one, maybe two additional investment alternatives, such as an international investment option, for example. Right now, we have not had enough interest for us to go through and develop that. But we will look and see how people are responding, how many assets are coming to the state board, and we may give them more additional investment flexibility.
Sarah Ortman.
Mr. Chair, to follow up, you're not allowing certain city funds within the city's designation to be commingled, but what about the similar types of funds from similar cities? Or are you going to be, will they all go into one account, or will they be separate and distinct accounts and investments?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, there will be one account and all the, I mean, we already do some of this for Metropolitan Council, for example. They have some money that they have put aside for the same kind of obligations Duluth has. The money from Duluth, if this legislation were to be passed, would be in the same account that the Metropolitan Council money is already in. We also do some other investments for other entities throughout the state that have asked for. I mean, we do some stuff where, like, Winona State University has a small endowment fund. We invest that for them. And that's all in this non-pension-related stuff. It's not a lot of money. It's $300 or $400 million. If I had $300 or $400 million, you wouldn't be talking to me. I'd be gone someplace. But in the overall scheme of the State Board of Investment, we have just under $50 billion of assets to manage, and we have to allocate our resources. We are watching this. If this non-pension related activity increases, we will increase our investment vehicles accordingly.
Thank you,
Senator Squay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as part of the earlier discussion was that there would be some savings in the management fees for this Duluth fund, because I assume you're larger. If more and more jurisdictions enter into using this vehicle and you add those two other programs, how is that going to affect, you know, your ability to keep those management fees down?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, what our management fees, especially for these accounts, we run these internally. If you put it in the form of percents, it would be about 0.001. That's pretty cheap.
Thank you.
Anything else, members?
Chairman?
Senator Pogomar.
Will both the $10 million and the $50 million be invested the same way, or will there be two different investment strategies, perhaps?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, again, that's up to the entity that is giving us those assets. They will be in the same vehicles. There are three vehicles. There's a cash vehicle.
Oh, that part I understand.
Yeah, be in the same vehicles.
Is it two different investments, though, the $10 million and the $50 million? Or is the $60 million all available for the same investments, and then the two accounts are set up in a way where the proceeds can only be used in a certain fashion.
Chair Bakker, Senator, we haven't gotten to that point. We don't want to count our money before anybody approves it, but the trustees of the investment would make that decision based on how long-term it needs to be and what's available from the State Board of Investment and looking at the different earnings. The most of the money for either the irrevocable trust or for the remainder of the Community Investment Trust Fund are long-term investments. The Community Investment Trust, we don't touch the corpus of it. We just use the investments. So that's pretty long-term. And the other post-employment benefit would probably not be quite as long-term because as we're having to meet the obligations for the retiree health benefits, probably within about 10 years we'd have to start using that to supplement our pay-as-you-go. So we're going to have to study that. I couldn't give you an answer off the top of my head.
And Mr. Chairman, who are the trustees? I was trying to figure out from the language who the trustees are going to be.
We just found out last week that there needs to be trustees, and right now we've inserted in there proposing the City of Duluth Investment Committee, which is comprised of the Finance Director, the City Treasurer, and the City Auditor.
Where's that language?
Mr. Wally?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, that was an issue that arose after the bill came from.
So it's not in here right
It's
now.
Not in here. It's okay. In an amendment that's really okay. Not appropriate for this committee. It will have to be done on the floor. Or back to the committee.
Well, Senator Pogemiller, there is an amendment that I asked Mr. Wally to run by Chair Rest and the local government committee. They've been unable to find her in the building. So this committee really has two options: to pass this bill to the floor with the understanding that Senator Solon will work with Senator Rest on the amendment, or to send the bill back to the local government committee. And I guess it's really the will of the committee what they'd like to do. But there is an amendment that's recently come to our attention. Senator Pogemiller.
I mean, I don't think this bill has to go to the finance committee.
Senator Cohen hasn't asked for it.
He will on the floor.
Well, he certainly should. I mean, I
it's not a secret it was on our agenda, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, no, I don't think you want to quite go to the floor that quickly. If I could ask State Board, how is it that is it just the fees that create the difference between the 4.5% and 5% return and the 10 or 11% return over a 25-year period? There's got to be something else going on.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pogemiller, what we will provide them, if they choose, is a long-term bond and a domestic equity component. Right now, all of their assets are in short-term fixed income. That's what cities have authorization for. They are not authorized to make long-term common stock and long-term bond investments for the most part. So we will give them the opportunity, if the legislature chooses, to invest in more volatile, long-term, higher return, somewhat higher risk investments. Again, over long periods of time, what these trusts generally are set up for should provide additional returns. So that's why I first wanted to come up. This is not an investment situation where you're going to expect to outperform every year. There will be volatility, but common stocks and long-term bonds have a higher expected return than short-term investment securities, but there is more volatility.
And that, Mr. Chair?
Senator Pogemiller.
Sure. And one of the pieces here, apparently private investment firms opposed this last year.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, they opposed the statewide version of this legislation when it had the State Board of Investment as the only investment vehicle. As I understand it right now, this bill, which is Duluth only and State Board of Investment and PERA only, everybody seems to have signed off. The statewide version of this bill, which will be, as I understand it, introduced at some future date, will provide for alternatives when it comes to both the administration and the investment component.
Would, Mr. Chairman, would a different alternative be to allow cities to use some of those investment vehicles under certain conditions?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, as I understand it, the new statewide portion of the bill will allow us to be, State Board Investment, to be an investment option.
And then one last question for Duluth. Thank you, Mr. Bricker. Is this benefit still available, or has it been terminated? Are we talking about a closed group of employees, or are we talking about a continual growth in the number of employees?
We are currently the 3-year contract just expired at the end of 2006, so we've been negotiating new contracts. We have tentative settlements with 4 of the 5 unions, and in those agreements we changed to a defined contribution instead of a defined benefit, and it's significantly less for new employees.
So if, Mr. Chairman, so if the final contract is settled along those lines, you would be talking about a closed group of employees?
Correct.
Is the $300 million based on exposure for that group?
Yes.
Or could that number go bigger?
It won't go bigger. It will go smaller, unfortunately, as people die. Your group gets smaller.
Right. And what's the total number of employees in that group at that point? Do you know? Are we talking 200 people, 500 people?
The chair and senator, the current number of people is about 2,160. That includes actives and retirees. And the actuarial liability is for both the current actives and the current retirees. What GASB is attempting to do is recognize the cost of health insurance over the entire years of service, even if they pay it for twice as long. And so the current retirees, none of that was set aside, or people like me who've been around for 30 years, none of that was set aside for me. So it's basically for the current retirees and the people working now. And once all the contracts are settled, that's cut off. Actually, one of the contracts is settled, and it retroactive to January 1 of 2006. People who started after January 2006 have a defined contribution, do not have a defined benefit.
Mayor Pogemiller.
Why not? What will be left for Duluth to invest other than this? If this $60 million is taken out of your portfolio and put in this an SBI portfolio, what's left that you're going to be investing?
Chair Bach and Senator, we have a pooled fund for all of our funds, and we have several utilities, and we have about $60 million in that pooled fund also. So still have that.
And so why wouldn't you put that $60 million in the SBA too?
Because we need that SBA to operate, and that has to stay in short-term investments. This is just something for this Community Investment Trust Fund is something we don't touch, and that's where we need the higher rate of return on the long-term investment. Our other money we use pretty much, it goes in and out every year with natural gas purchases, salaries, things like that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mrs. Stark, in the event that you're unable to negotiate this benefit away from some of your current bargaining units, is it possible that people the city hasn't even hired yet could participate in this program?
Chair, that if it doesn't get negotiated away, that would be a likely possibility. But we're right now, as the mayor said, four of the five bargaining units. One has a settled agreement. Three are tentative. One is voting next week. Another one is voting towards the end of February, and I'm not sure when the other one is. So it just leaves one union.
And is in the negotiating process with that remaining bargaining unit, is it still an outstanding issue?
Yes, it is.
Which unit is that?
And which unit is it?
That's the basic AFSCME unit.
And what percentage of the city employees is that?
That's interesting.
About two-thirds. We will not offer a defined benefit for health care at any point. We will not offer it. We can't. You have my word on that.
Mr. Mayor, should we have some language in here that says that this fund can only be used for current employees or retirees?
Chair, it would be difficult with an actuarial study to show funding then if we had separate pots of money for one number. We'd actually have to then have two actuarial studies done for two separate groups of people.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question. I was considering making a motion, and maybe I'll just make a comment. I think the concept is a good concept, but I'm thinking that it's premature at this point. I think the State Board of Investments needs to consider the long-term consequences for this policy, because there are all kinds of schools and cities and states that want to engage in this process. There was opposition to it last year at a certain level, and there are all kinds of issues outstanding on your particular proposal that have not yet been addressed. So it seems to me it's premature at this time, unless it goes to the State and Local Government Committee. You address the issue of your AFSCME bargaining unit, and unless we get some kind of guidance for the State Board of Investment about how to manage these funds. Mr. Chair, I was just saying I think that this bill may be premature until some of these other issues have been addressed. There's huge ramification. If we start down this road, there's no going back. Every city and county and state will be here looking to invest their funds in similar or different manners, and we should have more of a long-term approach, I think, to dealing with these issues instead of on a come as you will, and we'll try and work things out for you as you approach the Senate Tax Committee plan. So I can make a motion, Mr. Chair, to either table this bill at this time or move that it go to the State and Local Government Committee and maybe bring it back after it's been given consideration there.
Senator Urban, how would you feel about sending it to Finance and having them continue to do work on it?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it clearly needs additional hearing, and it should be considered by as many committees as possible before we do this, is my thinking. So if the chair would prefer the Finance Committee, then I would make a motion to move this bill to the Finance Committee, hoping that it would come back here after it's been given additional consideration and work over the next few weeks.
I think, Senator Ortman, I think you're on the right track, but let's take a little more discussion from the committee first. Senator Johnson?
Oh, I think, Mr. Chair, Senator Solenpretner,
I'll waive. I don't need to speak.
Senator Johnson? No? Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I'm not opposed to more discussion over the next few weeks. Some of the things that Senator Ortman is talking about are long-term horizon types of issues that rightly should be considered. And it is my sense that this is a big deal that we need to deal with this session. It's $300 million liability that Duluth is facing. They're figuring out ways to put their own money into the solution. It's granted a $300 million over a long period of time, but it's $300 million out of what is a $74 million annual budget for a city of 80-some thousand people. It's a huge bite, so I think we probably need to get on the path to helping them solve this problem this session.
Senator Solon.
Yep. Mr. Chair, I guess I will speak. Thank you, Senator Johnson. The thing is that this has already gone to state and local government operations. They have reviewed it. They have asked some of the same questions you have. They felt comfortable and moved it on. The only piece that was missing was how to administer or who would be the trustees to the accounts, how to administer that. And that language is being adopted in the other body. And that is something that we had thought we could adopt on the floor if we did not find Senator Russ this morning. Otherwise, it could be adopted in the Finance Committee. The PERA has weighed in. State Board of Investment has weighed in. They have been looking at this for now a couple of years. And they, I don't want to speak for them, but I believe they've already stated that they are open to this arrangement.
Mr.
Chair. Chairman and Senators, Senator Ortman makes a good point, but if I could just comment, this didn't happen overnight. We didn't create it. This happened because the promise was ignored for more than two decades, and it grew into a monster. Fixing this problem will cost me my job. To delay it, estimates are that it costs about $40,000 per day, and that's just a rough guess. But the delay from last year to this year costs somewhere between $10 and $15 million. Every single day costs us money, so we implore you to please not lump us in with the other cities and delay it by months. We need to move ahead and fix our problem. We're not asking for money. We're just asking for legislation that helps us fix it ourselves.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor, what is the timetable for finalizing all the, negotiating all the contracts with all the bargaining units?
We have tentatives with three. We have a firm agreement with one, and the final, we are in mediation, but we are significantly apart. As I said, we will not offer a defined benefit at any point. We've made that clear. We can't. Which is why I say this is going to probably cost me my job. I have to be firm.
Anything else, members?
Senator Ortman. I appreciate your comments, Mr. Mayor, and I appreciate the fact that the city is working so hard to address what is a critical problem for the city and its finances. I am concerned about the long-term nature of it. At some point, if everyone follows your lead, the State Board of Investment will be investing billions of taxpayer dollars on behalf of cities, counties, and school districts across the state. And I want to make sure that they've been given our guidance and some policy aspects that we're concerned about on a statewide basis when they start investing all of these dollars. And so I will not oppose you, and I won't try to stop you, but I do think we need to take our time to make those considerations so that we can vote and support you, not to stop you, but to support you. And I would want to see this move quickly and get past this year if possible, but I also think we should take our time enough to look at some of those ramifications and consequences on a statewide basis.
Senator Squay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Senate Counsel Ms. Zoff. This bill just is for Duluth. So any other community that is going to try to do this is going to come in front of this committee also. And did I hear discussion that we are having a statewide bill? Has it been introduced? Somebody know the status of what that is?
Senator Squay, I in the conversation I had with the League of Cities recently in my office, Mr. Carlson indicated to me that the League was working on a bill and would be bringing one forward sometime later this session.
So, Mr. Chair, then we are going to have a statewide bill in front of this committee. We can continue this discussion about the ramifications and the long-term effects of this type of policy. And in the meantime, any community that wants to do this will be in front of the tax committee.
Senator Scoy, it would be my intent to request any of those bills come to this committee before they go to the floor.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I think that the idea of moving this to finance is a good one. They can deal with whatever amendments that they have. Senator Solon can work to build support for her bill to make sure that she passes it on the floor in the intervening time. And I'll look forward to a discussion on the Senate bill.
Does anyone in the audience want to speak to the bill?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. I've prepared a written statement that can be distributed to the committee. We support Senate File 60. We urge that you move this legislation separately. The city of Duluth, each day that goes by, the liability increases by not having this legislation in effect. The other comment in sitting back and observing that I would make is that the language to the amendment that you're looking at here is purely technical, because the legislation as it passed the local government committee included that the trustees are already in the bill. This just defines who the trustees would be. So I would urge that you move ahead with this. We recognize that this is an issue for all the other cities and counties throughout the state, and there will be legislation coming forward to address that. But given the urgency with the city of Duluth and the fact that they were working on this and this was actually ready to go last session, we would urge that you move it forward today. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogamon.
So what is the last bargaining unit thinking about this, the three-fourths of the employees in Duluth?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogamiller, I'm not on the negotiating team, nor do I think it would be the right thing to do to begin negotiating a contract before the Senate Tax Committee. So I would, at this point, defer that back to the negotiations. We obviously are the last contract that's out. It's my understanding that of the employees that are covered with this, we have about 600 of those employees that we represent. But I would not feel comfortable commenting, nor do I think it would be appropriate to begin discussing the negotiations.
Mr. Chairman, when will the contract be settled?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogamiller, I don't know the exact date, but I know that they are working very hard to get it settled.
So it could be imminent?
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that they have been meeting in meetings this week and are moving forward, but I do not want to make a commitment as to the exact date.
Kind of to your point, Senator Pogamon, I think it would be a little risky for the legislature to pass this into law prior to those employee contracts being settled. I think most of us around this table understand collective bargaining, and I don't think we want the legislature to be used as some kind of a hitching post for either side in the negotiations of local employee contracts. So that's kind of what I'm thinking, and unless I hear different, I guess I would probably suggest that to Senator Cohen also. Senator Pogamiller.
Chairman, I'd move the A3 amendment.
Council, do you want to tell us what the A3 amendment does? Members, do you all have it?
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment clarifies some of the responsibility in the account that's established in Section 2. Some of the changes had been alluded to in the testimony earlier. Rather than requiring PERA to establish the fund for the city, it provides that the PERA will administer the trust fund that's established by the city, and then clarifies that the City of Duluth Investment Committee, which the finance director had referred to earlier, will be the trustee of the irrevocable trust. It also then provides that it deletes language that had provided that the city would establish an account in the fund, and instead would clarify that the city, rather than the executive director of PERA, would ensure that the withdrawals comply with the requirements, and then adds a duty that the city's required to ensure that the investment management of the assets complied with the prudent investor rules.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, can you remind us again of the City of Duluth Investment Committee? I thought you said it was the finance director, the auditor, and who was the other one?
Treasurer.
The treasurer. Mr. Chair, this is one of my big concerns. I'm not sure we have the right people being the trustees of these funds. There's no representative of the employees who are looking after what happens with these funds, no member of the public. And so that's why I was thinking the State and Local Government Committee would make some sense here. I'm not sure we've got the right trustees for these funds.
Mm-hmm. Senator Orban, we've been unable to get a hold of Senator Rest, but I think if we send this bill to finance, we have called her attention to the fact that the tax committee is putting an amendment on here that's probably not within our jurisdiction, but just a matter of housekeeping, I think, are trying to get this cleaned up. So, Mr. Wally?
Mr. Chairman, I did just leave the room, and I did find Senator Rest, and I explained to her that this amendment had been prepared, but action was being deferred. At the time I left the room, there hadn't been action on the amendment as yet. Her comment was, if the bill went back to her committee, they would promptly address this issue, and that she thought it appropriate then to send the bill on to the floor.
Well, the bill's, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemiller.
The bill's going to the Finance Committee.
Well, Senator Pogemiller, I did hear just moments ago from the Finance Committee, and they would like to see the bill. So,
Mr. Chairman, I just...
Senator Pogemiller.
I think... just on the face of it, this is a bill that has to be in the Senate Finance Committee, and some notion that this would have not, that this would have gone from a policy committee to the floor is just not.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Sloan.
We'll go over wherever the bill has to go.
So do we need.
Senator Pogemiller, would you rather the local government committee put this amendment on, or would you like to put it on here first?
Put it on, send it to finance. I mean, I don't know that the bill has to go back. I mean, isn't the question why didn't that committee do its work in the first instance?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I think there are several complicated questions behind this bill. And I can see that your amendment is attempting to improve the bill. But the very issue in your amendment that I've raised, the trustees, should be considered by a policy committee like the State and Local Government Committee. And the fact that we want to move this bill along or move it to Senator Cohen's committee is, I suppose, a good enough goal. But I'm not sure why we can't take enough time to send it to State and Local to review this issue and then send it to the Finance Committee before it goes to the floor. I think more consideration is a good thing rather than bad.
Senator Ortman, I think Senator Pogemiller's point is what Mr. Wally just testified to, was he just talked to the State and Local Committee, and they would like to put this on and send it to the floor. I think there's some agreement here that this bill needs to go to finance, so maybe if it's going to go there, this committee ought to make sure it goes there.
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, the chair of the State and Local Government Committee may agree with this amendment, but I'm not sure about all the members, and you're having concerns about members raising issues on the floor that haven't been heard in committee, and I would say this is one that has not been heard in committee that should have been heard by that policy committee.
Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Ortman, if Senator Rest, there's a rule. Bill's been through her committee. She feels she wants the bill back. She can use the rules on the Senate floor to get it back. My question would be, why wasn't this taken care of in her committee in the first instance?
I think we agree.
Right. And so I think the notion of sending this to finance is probably the safest thing to do, where maybe they'll look at the bill and read it.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pogemiller, I actually think we agree on the motion, and the motion is to send the bill back to Finance Committee.
Mm-hmm. Now we know why bills come to the Tax Committee.
Good work, Mr. Chairman. Good work, Mr.
Senator
Chairman.
Ortman, on the A3 amendment, members, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
No.
Senator Ortman, Mr. Bicker, you have something more?
Well, I just want to make a couple quick clarifying things, if I could, Mr. Chairman. One, there's been some discussion about the State Board of Investment providing input to how this money should be invested for the cities and counties. State Board can only provide investment vehicles. If we tell them how to invest money, we are going to take the fiduciary responsibility for all these liabilities, and the board doesn't want, or the state doesn't want, the liability for these assets, which we would infer if we are dictating the investment policy. All we can do is provide investment vehicles. You know, and as far as, you know, who's going to be on these boards, you know, obviously, Mr. Chairman and committee, you can do what you want, but when you get the statewide version of this, there's going to be 150 municipalities, cities, school districts They're all going to have different boards. So if you're going to have a problem with Duluth's selection of three, I don't know what you're going to do after you get the statewide version of this. And again, it's really not my issue. I just happen to be observing it. So sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bicker. Senator Ortman moves that Senate File 60, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I thought it would be helpful for us to spend a little bit of time on the price of government recommendations. The governor did submit, as he's required to, along with his budget, his price of government recommendations for state and local revenue targets. So, members, I thought it might be good for us all to spend a little bit of time to see what is really happening in the state, what is the trend of kind of our degree of taxation as it's related to the personal income here in the state of Minnesota. So, thought that might be helpful for the committee.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Charlie Bielek. I'm the Director of Budget Planning Operations in the Minnesota Department of Finance. And what I'd like to do for you this morning is give you just a, I'm sure that many of the committee members are familiar with some of the price of government information, but to give you a quick review of some of the requirements and statute, some of the history, and kind of the current information on what the price of government information shows relative to state and local taxes and other revenues in Minnesota. And Mr. Chairman, I think I can make this quite brief to hit some of the highlights. There are two pieces of information in your packet. The first is just a series of brief slides that highlight some of the key components of price of government. The second piece is the transmittal letter from Commissioner of Finance Tom Hansen with the governor's price of government recommendations. And I'd like to speak to the first, briefly about the first packet. The price of government requirements were enacted in 1994 but in the Senate, in the omnibus tax bill enacted that year. And at that time, it was quite an innovation in state government nationally. It received a lot of attention, because it was designed to do a couple of key things, and I'd just like to highlight those for you before I go into the requirements. One, it did present the first complete picture of state and local finances on a continuing basis in the state of Minnesota. Secondly, it was highlighted as a kind of an innovative approach to discussing taxes, property taxes, and the relationship to state and local financing. Now, there had been information available on a national level comparing state taxes and levels of taxes. However, that was always backward-looking. It was always 2 years behind and where Minnesota ranked nationally with regard to taxes. The price of government required statute required that not only do we report historical information, but that we project that information forward 4 years ahead. So then it was touted as kind of a longer-range budget and tax planning tool. And thirdly, it offered for the first time for policymakers, citizens, and the media kind of a performance measure of state and local finances in the state of Minnesota. Because what the price of government does is it really says, here's the cost of state and local government in Minnesota. Here's how much it is as a percent of dollars earned by Minnesota taxpayers. And finally, it was expected at that time that it would shift kind of the budget deliberations and the policymaking process in the legislature, because some of the requirements of price of government statute required that the legislature deal with taxes at the beginning rather than the end of budget deliberations. The bottom of that page highlights the price of government requirements. I just point out for you one thing, that the price of government is not a term used anywhere in statute. In statute, it goes by the rather awkward name of budgeting revenues relative to personal income. Price of government has become kind of the common name that has been used to describe the requirements over recent years. There are several requirements. The first requirement is that the Department of Finance, along with the Department of Revenue and Department of Education, prepare a forecast of all state and local revenues in November and February in conjunction with the state budget forecasts. Those are presented with each forecast at the state level and then after each legislative session. But the statute goes beyond just the requirement to prepare this information. In January of odd numbered years, that is this year, in conjunction with the governor's budget, the governor is required to recommend revenue targets for the next two biennia. This year, those would be revenue targets for FY 08 and 09, the budget in consideration, and the out biennium 10 and 11. It also requires that those revenue targets be rather specific, not just the total amount to be raised, but it requires that state and local revenue targets express them in three different ways. One, as a percent of total Minnesota personal income. Two, the target share between state and local governments, that is, money raised by the state, money raised by local non-school and school districts. And finally, the revenue mix, that is, the revenue mix by type, sales tax, income taxes, property taxes, and others. And surprisingly, the issues being discussed this year relative to increasing property taxes are no different than issues that were discussed in 10 years ago and 15 years ago in the debate of where taxes are rising. Finally, it requires that the legislature take the information proposed by the governor and the targets proposed by the governor and act on it, that the legislature adopt by concurrent resolution revenue targets at the same level of detail by March 15th of this year. And finally, there is one other provision in law in section 16A103 that with each February forecast, the Department of Revenue shall report local government revenues compared to the targets enacted in law. So those are the basic requirements of the price of government statute. In the back page of this handout is simply a two-page table, and typical of a lot of finance tables, there's lots of numbers on it. However, I just want to highlight for you some of the significant pieces of information that are available in this table for you as decision makers, and how this table and this information can be presented to the public and to the media to describe state and local finances in Minnesota. Page two of the handout is kind of the highest level of the story. What it does is it describes what is the current price of government information in Minnesota. This year, fiscal year 2007, about 16.5 cents of every dollar will go for state and local services. Total own source revenues, that is money raised directly by the state government and local units of government, excluding federal monies, will exceed $33 billion. So this year we're going to raise $33 billion from state taxes, local taxes, state fees, local fees, and other sources. And that's compared to a base of Minnesota personal income expected to be $201 billion this year. The price of government information is really the important part of the price of government information is not so much a focus on a particular year, but what's been the trend. Price of government information goes back to 1991 for Minnesota and is projected now through fiscal year 2011. And an important part of this story, and we find it useful in describing the state budget, is the price of government information is useful in describing and differentiating who collects the state revenue versus who spends the state revenue. And in Minnesota, this picture of state and local finances is very important to understand relative to how decisions are made. This summarizes now today that the state really collects 62% of state revenues in the form of fees, taxes, and other revenues, but really only spends 35% of it. What's the difference? The difference is intergovernmental aids that flow from the state to local units of government. In describing kind of the information contained on the table, I think it's just important to remind you of some of the key components of the price of government information. First of all, this is a snapshot of state and local revenues. It's not the same as state and local spending. What it purports to do on an aggregate level is account for all of the monies raised at the state and local level. So that includes what we refer to in price of government as own source revenues. That is, monies collected at the different levels of government directly. Own source revenues include a comprehensive picture of all sources of revenue at these levels. At the tax level, it includes state taxes, local property taxes at the local level, as well as local option taxes. So all taxes are accounted for both at the state and local level. Also, it includes a historical perspective and forecast for non-tax revenues. This includes licenses and permits, charges for services, investment earnings, special assessments, and at the state level, post-secondary tuition. Finally, not included in own source revenues are intergovernmental revenues. Primary intergovernmental revenues that are received are state aids to local units of government, local aids that flow between different units of government, for example, from counties to school districts, and finally, federal grants. What it does not include is it does not include some of the enterprise revenues for local units of government, cities and towns, for example, including utilities, electric utilities, or liquor stores, those that are not commonly thought of as normal functions of government.
Mr. Bielek, does it include golf course revenue?
Mr. Chairman, it does include golf courses as well as other recreational types of things. Regional park fees, for example, would be included in these revenues. So it is a very comprehensive source and very few exclusions.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Just a clarification. I think I might have misheard. So own source revenues do count, or intergovernmental revenues, that third bullet down in that on that slide, are counted as own source revenues?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, no, they are not. And actually, in this slide, we probably should have noted that those are not included as own source revenues.
Right. Mr. Chair?
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Is that, at least in the first two instances, is that because we'd be kind of counting those dollars twice if we did count those, the state aids and the local aids?
That is correct. And as I move through the presentation, I will show you how it's important to distinguish or how it is easier to distinguish own source revenues versus total revenues. The price of government information will answer, for example, in the case of school districts, how much they raise directly and what is their total revenue picture, including state aids.
Thank you.
Finally, on the top of page 3, it is just useful to remind you, again, what this is being measured against. The price of government is commonly stated as a percent of Minnesota personal income. This slide is just meant to remind you of what some of the components are. This is not the same as saying wages and salaries. Minnesota personal income is a very broad measure of Minnesotans' income. It includes wages and salary disbursements, rental income, interest and dividends, transfer payments such as unemployment compensation and Social Security. In the price of government information, the historical data is based on information by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the U.S. Department of Commerce, and, of course, for projections for the current year, the next biennium and the future biennium, it's based on projections by the Department of Finance using state and national econometric models. So what has been the recent history of the price of government in Minnesota? And that's shown in a table at the bottom of the page. Through the 1990s, the price of government, that is, revenues collected at state and local level as a percent of Minnesota personal income, hovered between 17 and 18%. Beginning in the 1999 through 2000, generally, the price of government has remained relatively constant. That is between 16 and 16.5%. And I direct your attention to fiscal year 2003 on the table. It's the lowest bar, but it also shows you, what this table shows you is two things, not only the total price of government, but in distinguishing the three bars, it shows you in the lower bar, first, the amount raised at the state level. The next bar, the amount raised at the local non-school level, that is counties, cities, and township level. And finally, the top of the bar, monies raised by school districts, including school district property taxes, fees, and other sources. And if you reflect on fiscal year 2003, you'll note that the school district portion of the bar dropped. Fiscal year 2003 is when we did the school finance reform, introduced the statewide property tax, and lowered school district's portion of property taxes. So this is a useful picture in terms of presenting to citizens, one, what's the cost of government relative to what they're earning these days?
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions that have kind of occurred to me. We're talking about the ratio of this, you know, how much money the state spent and how much we gave out to local units of government. Do you have a trend? Is that ratio going up or down? Is that changing? And then I don't know if you want to answer that first or how I should do this, but I have about three questions. So is that ratio changing? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, the ratio has changed. Over time, it is easy using the price of government information, and there is a real wealth of information you can derive from the table at the end of this presentation. Over time, particularly, you can see the shift in fiscal year 2003 as the state began to collect more of total revenues collected than the local units, but actually continues to spend less of the total.
So, Mr. Chair, the state collection is going up, but the percent that they're spending is not tracking along.
The percentage that the state collects of total state and local revenues has been increasing. The example here is statewide property tax. A revenue source that used to be collected at the local level is now collected at the state level. But in the same sense as state aids to schools, for example, have been increasing, the state is actually spending less of the money at the state level and transferring more of the money raised to the local level and being spent by schools, for example.
Then the other question I had was when I look at the list of revenue sources, and I can see they're all increasing, do you have a information that would track these numbers kind of a percent? Just the dollars. I mean, I could sit down and do all the math, but is...
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I think that is the value of this information to you as members of the Tax Committee. Yes, all of that information can be derived in various form from these numbers. The price of government information is easily used to answer the question, for example, over the last 10 years, how much have the state income tax collections increased compared to state sales tax collections, as an example. Yes, there are many variations of this table that can be had to answer those exact corrections. I don't have every possible variation today, but yes.
And Mr. Chair, maybe that would be something we could get in the future so we could look at these numbers as a percent of change as opposed to just what the actual dollars are.
Sure. If members want to have some additional discussion on this, if you just let our committee know what more you'd like to discuss, I'm sure Mr. Bielek can bring the new information. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I believe we usually have that percentage tracking of how much is state versus local share, and I was looking for that here, and I didn't see that. I think that would be helpful as well. But I also had just a general comment about this. I think this is an interesting exercise, but I always thought that one of the points of a lot of government is countercyclical to the economy. The economy takes a nosedive. We need to do more help for people who can't afford housing and health care and so on. The economy does well, the government spending can dip. So we're countercyclical to the economy, so saying that this line is smooth across here strikes me as that not necessarily what the goal should be. The goal should be to have government spend when it needs to spend and not spend when it doesn't need to spend. So I've since 1974, I've questioned why we make a big deal out of this, and frankly, I guess the legislature hasn't, because I don't think we've made our recommendations every year either. But I'm not sure why this is a good measure. If our goal is to have government be as efficient as possible, that may mean some good years it drops way down and some bad years it climbs, instead of making it consistent across the years.
Mr. Bielek, I have a wedding reception to go to on Saturday night. Be a whole bunch of people there. People are just getting their truth and taxation statements about what their property taxes are going to be, and probably thinking about or have filed their state and federal income taxes, and I suspect somebody's going to come to me and say, can't you do something about taxes? My taxes keep going up and up and up. Would it be fair for me to respond that since I was elected in 1995, that statewide at least, maybe not for them individually, that the share of the percentage of personal income that goes to state and local government is less today than it was in 1995 when I was elected?
Mr. Chairman, that would be exactly a correct statement to be able to make. Again, in the mid-90s, the price of government hovered around 17.5%. Today, Minnesotans are paying 16.5 cents of every dollar earned for government. If you look at the price of government information projected forward, actually without any changes, the price of government will drop to 16.1% under current law for fiscal year 8-9 and to 15.9% for 2010 and 11. So that would be an exactly correct statement. I have had an opportunity to present this to citizens and interest groups and other types of, and they all find this information very valuable. If I can just refer you again to the chart on the bottom of page 4, that's a chart that I think maybe isn't exactly very well communicated in Truth in Taxation. It's the story of who raises the money and who spends the money. Again, this is just a graphical depiction of the price of government information for fiscal year 2007. And what it highlights, I think, for you and citizens, for the most part, in a very understandable manner, is that while the state is collecting roughly about $27.3 billion in fiscal year 2007, looking at the local government pieces of the pie, school district will raise $9.6 billion. But nearly 76% of school district funding will come from the state. The state is raising the money, and school districts are receiving about nearly three-quarters of their budget from state aids. The property tax portion of school district revenues is only 15%, and non-tax revenues, fees, and other sources, about 9%. Similarly, if you look at the non-school, the local units of government, cities, counties, and towns in aggregate, again, the major portion of their revenues are non-tax revenues, that is, fees, charges, assessments, intergovernmental payments, that is, state aids, 27%, and property taxes account for about 30% of local government revenues. Now, of course, that varies from unit of government to unit of government, but again, that's the basic story of how government is financed here in the state of Minnesota, and sometimes not adequately communicated in kind of the Truth in Taxation statements. If I could just refer you to the chart above that, one major point here, where it shows that the price of is sensitive to projected revenues and personal income forecasts, I think with regard to Senator Scow's question and maybe Senator Marty's question and comments, what this shows you is a comparison. State the you see two references, calendar year and fiscal year, because the state is on a different fiscal year basis, for example, than cities, counties, and towns. And so what it's showing you for calendar year and the equivalent fiscal year, state and local owned source revenues and how they're growing by year, historically and projected, compared to how Minnesota's personal income is growing historically and projected. And if you focus on the 4 years, the projected years at the bottom, you'll see why the price of government is projected to decline. State, total state and local revenues, for example, for fiscals year 8 and 9, 10, 11, are expected to increase about 4.6% a year, while total personal income is expected to increase about 5.1 to 5.5% a year. Revenues are not growing. Current law revenues will not grow as fast as Minnesota personal income is projected to go, thereby forcing kind of a decline. Now, some revenue sources, again, the questions you raised about individual revenue sources, income taxes may be growing at a rate equal to or greater than Minnesota personal income. Other revenue sources, for example, fees or the annual tobacco settlement payments don't grow as fast as Minnesota personal income. So disaggregating this information to individual revenue sources, again, I think is a useful depiction not only for tax committee members but others to understand how well Minnesota's tax system is responding in terms of future growth to the growth in Minnesota personal income. It is not a one-to-one growth.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I have a birthday party on Saturday night. It's always a risk to go to a big party this time of year if you're in the legislature. I have a feeling I'll get some of those same questions. I'm wondering if we have the information that will fit in the federal tax liability for residents, and whether that has impacted this same chart.
Mr. Bielek. Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, I think the other part of the story that you're referring to is this was referring to state and local government taxes and fees. The other part of the story is, okay, if state and local taxes and fees account for 16.5% of revenue, what is the federal tax liability? Is that another 20% or 30% of that? I don't have that information available with me. That is a question that can be answered and I think would be a useful actually addition to part of the explanation.
Senator.
Mr. Chair, if you're looking at folks who are looking at their overall tax burden and whether it's changed over time, I think to be realistic, you have to focus in on whether the federal tax changes have also impacted this chart. And I think it'd be worth your effort. I would appreciate it very much if I could look at how that might impact, especially the chart on page 3 at the bottom, and see what that looks like.
Senator Dibble.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if it's Senator Artman's birthday on Saturday. Is it your birthday?
No,
and are you going to bring treats for all of us?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not my birthday.
Well, Senator Dibble, I'm hoping people will be kind to me because the wedding reception I'm going to is for my son. So I hope the questions aren't too hard because it'll be a pretty happy day for my family.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langseth.
Well, we've all listened to the Kodrowski-Gunyo presentations, and what they basically say is if we leveled it off, the percentage, if we leveled off, then there would be plenty of money for schools and so on. But in order to do that, you have to change the tax structure a little bit, which would be the perception of taxes going up. So.
Mr. Bielek, thank you for coming to the Tax Committee. Members, we're going to meet next week. I'm going to sit down with staff here either later today or tomorrow, and we're going to start picking off some issue areas and start hearing some bills next week. So we'll be sending out a memo yet this week to tell you what that schedule looks like. Anybody, any other business? If not, this committee's adjourned.